Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That is Bob Mackowitz. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matthew. I am. You know what I think is really cruel about this time of year? At least for those of us with seasonal allergies.
Yeah.
Is you get through the winter and survive all the bleakness. And as soon as the sun comes out, so does the pollen. And it's like your reward for enduring winter is constant post-nasal drip.
Yeah. Yeah. When do you get the good stuff? When do you get the good stuff?
I like fall, personally. I feel like there's a three-month window where Canada's perfect. And it's kind of the second week of August till about the first week of December. But you know me, I'm a morose character. You know,
yeah.
I'm like one of these Lord Byron, vinegar-drinking, sallow, poetry-reading saps.
Yeah, see, for me, you know, I want late spring and give me to early fall. Basically, I'll take from the Masters to week three of the NFL season. That's my peak time.
I feel very out of sync with the rest of, well, humanity, pretty much, because I don't love spring, and I think summer's okay. I'm really into fall.
That's ridiculous.
I know. I hear myself saying it, and I wish it wasn't true, Matt, but here we are.
Yeah, but see, here would be my rebuttal. I don't know if you actually believe that, because you're now a cottager. By definition, a cottager must embrace summer.
It's helped a lot. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's helped a lot. It's
canoeing, swimming, you know, it's all there.
I feel like summer before was a pilot that wasn't going to go to air, but then we recast some key roles with a cottage.
Right.
And, yeah. and now it's gonna see the light of day.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about golf, which I didn't watch, but apparently everybody else in the universe did. I want to talk about the NHL. I want to talk about the NBA. Trinity Bellwoods.
Yep.
I got a thought about Vera Farmiga, the actress, which is weird, but I think you'll enjoy. Life advice. I even asked for listener questions. I have a ton here, Matt, but where would you like to start?
You know what? We're going to start at Godzilla second. You've piqued my interest on this Vera Farmiga. I can't ever say her name. She was great in Up in the Air, the George Clooney movie. What's your thoughts on her?
Okay, so she's been in The Departed, and she was in this Godzilla movie I was watching yesterday, Godzilla King of Monsters.
And yeah, she is in that.
So it occurred to me, like, I really like her as an actress, but I wonder sometimes if she's good or not. I'm not sure. And then I started to think, okay, well, she was really good in The Conjuring. And she's pretty good in this Godzilla movie. And then not so good in The Departed, opposite Leonardo DiCaprio and Jack Nicholson and all these, you know, powerhouse actors. And it got me to thinking, is she the acting version of a good stats on a bad team player?
Oh, is she Sharif Abdul-Rahim?
Kinda, you know, like... The stats are there. The reputation's there. You know, we'll remember the All-Stars, but, you know, she's really good in The Conjuring. Really good. But, I thought she was kind of not the best part about The Departed. So it got me to thinking, are there just some actors who are really good when the material's not that great? But if you surround them with, like, the Meryl Streeps and the Cate Blanchetts of the world, then they don't look as good?
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right. And I'm now like just trying to think of who are those other actors out there that just, you know, I don't know why I thought of Martin Mull. It's totally not fair to him, but who do you got?
Like Tim Roth.
Yeah.
Tim Roth always feels like a good actor until you see him with a whole bunch of other good actors at the same time. Then it seems like he's overacting as opposed to like a William H. Macy, who's always good, no matter what the material is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just started to think, is there an acting version of a good stats, bad team player? Is Vera Farmiga that? I like her, though. Like, I got no beef. I just think, like, when I think back to The Departed, I remember thinking, this movie's got great acting. I don't buy her character. you know, the psychotherapist who's working with Leo and that affected Boston accent, and I don't know.
What about Kirstie Alley?
Hmm, interesting.
I think
because she was good in Look Who's Talking?
I just, you know, she was always one of the, well, I don't know. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back. She was really good in Cheers. Here's the problem, Bob. We could do the next 57 minutes of just throwing out names, but let's drill down for a second. Why were you watching Godzilla?
Okay, so I'm really glad you asked this. I have this weird relationship with Godzilla. And you know I love my movie monsters and my movie villains, right?
Yeah.
And my relationship with Godzilla is really weird. And I find when my brain is tapioca, as it was yesterday because of lack of sleep and seasonal allergies, I turn to Godzilla movies. Isn't that odd?
It's comfort food. It's your movie comfort food.
So this is what it got me to thinking, Matt. Why is Godzilla popular? Godzilla is the king of monsters. Godzilla might be the number one monster movie franchise on the planet, going back to the Japanese film Gojira back in 1954. Why is Godzilla popular? Like, what's so great about this character? There's actually very little there when you think about it.
Bob, it's simple. Kids dig metaphors about the dangers of atomic nuclear weapons. Kids love it.
I liked Godzuki from the cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I think about King Kong, and you know I love King Kong.
Yeah.
But King Kong, there's a certain, because of the Beauty and the Beast angle, there's a certain humanity.
Yeah, you know, there's a tragedy there.
But Frankenstein, again, a creature lost in a world he didn't create, you know? But Godzilla's got no personality. He just roars and stomps on stuff and shoots, like, atomic fire out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He's got no lines. He's got no nuance.
No, he just crushes shit. It's kind of all he does. My favorite Godzilla was from, I forget the cartoon strip. It might have been, like, The Far Side. But the basic premise was Godzilla is crushing people's houses, and the husband says, lock the door. How's that going to help? I don't know where it's from, but I always laughed when I saw that in some sort of cartoon strip.
I feel like we've gone about as far as we need to on Godzilla. I feel like I've made my point.
There still hasn't been a great movie, though. We still do not have a great Godzilla movie. They tried one with Bryan Cranston, but he dies in the first 10 minutes, so it was a whole switcheroo there. We've yet for me to have the Matthew Broderick one wasn't very good. Much like Fantastic Four, Godzilla, still haven't nailed it.
And they wanted to create a Monsterverse. They were actually pretty open about it. It's called the Monsterverse, which connects Kong Skull Island and the Godzilla movies. And, you know, why can't we just make a movie without creating one of these IP franchises? Like, let's just really concentrate on what would make a great... And this one could have been good, too, because there were some interesting subplots to it, but then it just wound up being too much stupid action, which was what I needed, because my brain was tapioca, as said before, though.
There you go.
So, you know what? I've sort of commandeered this conversation thus far. Why don't you take it over for a while, Maddie?
No. You missed the golf, but the great thing about the golf event on Sunday, and the ratings were boffo for it, was we actually had a sports moment, you know, like a real legit, oh, wow, sports moment. And I'm sure you saw the highlight of Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
The Tom Brady, it was his third shot on a par five. I don't know what iron he had, you know, 130, 40 yards, and he nailed it. And the great thing was, until then, all of planet Earth was dunking on Brady because Mr. Perfect, there was never anything to make fun of him about. And so for 6.5 holes, everyone is doing it. Brooks Koepka tweeted, hey, I'll give $100,000 if Brady can make par. And then he hits this shot and he was able to give a big F you to social media, to Barkley. It was wonderful.
So why do you think this event worked? I mean, apart from that moment, which you're right, like you could never script that moment. That's just magic in a bottle and happens when it happens. But what do you think this event in general worked and people loved it so much?
One, the general, everyone's starving for sports. That's the base. But that's too simplistic. Justin Thomas was a great broadcaster. He nailed it, and, you know, throwing out lines like, you know, Charles, I'd love to see your fat ass dunk right now. And he was great. He was irreverent. He was fun. Barkley was there, so that's always insta-fun. Phil Mickelson, just hearing him give Brady advice on every hole became compelling. There was just always enough layers of compelling stories there that never allowed for a true lull. The golf carts went super fast. You know, there's just a lot. There was a lot going on.
So let's go back to this idea of the commentary, because what I've heard the most was that people love Thomas and people love Barkley because they were irreverent. They respected the guys, but they didn't revere them.
Yeah.
Which you often get, whether a lot of these broadcasters mean to or not. And they also didn't pretend to be objective third-party observers. You know, like most games when they're called, people try to not have a bias one way or the other.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like the opposite of sports commentary, the way people described it. Is there anything to be learned from that, or was it a one-off?
I hope there's stuff to be learned, because people are... Here's the question, though. Will people, when sports happens again, do we want that irreverence? We say we do, but there's also hero worship. There's also, you can't blaspheme in the church of sport, you know, and will we allow ourselves to be a little less rigid? That's the question.
That's a great question, and I come back to this because you and I love Tony Kornheiser from ESPN, right?
Yep.
And we both think that he's one of the smartest, cleverest, and funniest commentators working in sports today or over the last two or three decades. Fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
So why couldn't a guy like that work on Monday Night Football? Even Tony Kornheiser was seen as not serious enough. This is a guy who's won Peabody Awards. This is a guy who's like one of the most celebrated columnists in all of America. But he just didn't feel football enough. I don't know if we can do it, Matt. We say we want fun. I don't think sports people want fun.
They do, but they want it on their terms. I loved when Jimmy Kimmel used to go in the booth and made jokes about Theismann being fired. I liked Dennis Miller when he did Monday Night Football, and it's just the pairings, it was three of them, and I don't think it worked with Dan Fouts. But listen, we've tried this before. Hell, we've talked about it on this podcast. You know, it's been brought up. George Robopoulos. Hey, George, you're passionate. You love hockey. You're entertaining. Your energy. You bring something different. We want to hire you. And then when they drop the puck on game one, they're like, don't do what we told you to do.
I honestly believe, for a lot of reasons, that my tenure in sports always had an asterisk by it, whether that was as the producer of Off the Record or on air at TSN 1050. And I think the asterisk that was next to it was... not that I didn't love sports, because I do, and you know that.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't love sports in the way that most sports fans love sports. I see it as part of culture. I don't see it as more important than culture. I see it as kind of a weird kissing cousin to things like music and movies. And even, you know, the great revolution of Off the Record was to sort of, to bring in pop culture and to break down some of those walls. We were doing it before anybody else, certainly in Canada, and really... across North America too. Trust me, when I went to ESPN, they were pretty happy with what we were doing. They were leaning forward pretty good. But I always felt like I could never really fit in because I didn't love sports more than anything else. And I kind of believe that's what fans really want, is they want to believe in the alpha male who loves sports even more than they do. It's this weird hierarchy thing. Do you buy that theory?
Yeah, there's a lot there. Absolutely. There is this reverence. Well, I mean, part of what I love about sports is it has these classic Hollywood tropes. And beyond that, it's a metaphor for how hard work can help you succeed. And it's a place where meritocracy and theory, you know, reigns over everything else. And those basic ideals we like. It's part in our DNA. So I think then we just raise our reverence for sports sometimes to a level that it doesn't really need to be. And sometimes we just need to all relax and not take it so seriously.
I found that you've carved out a nice niche. And I think one of the reasons why you've been able to do it is because of your CFL love. the fact that you write for CFL.ca, I think really gives you a leg up, because people recognize, at least in that sport, you're actually an expert in this country. Mm-hmm. I think that helps you so that you can go out and you can do your AMC questions. But when push comes to shove, when it's time to talk football, you can go toe-to-toe with Chris Schultz. You've got your articles that you do every week. Like, you actually are part, at least in that regard, of the sports mainstream. I think it helps you.
It gives me cover. It gives, you know, it gives me a little bit of, it gives me cover. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I'm going in.
Yeah. You know, it's, I can poke fun at it all, but then I'll spend 20 minutes yelling about why Brett Favre is better than Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And really, really mean it.
Oh God. Yeah. 100%.
So much. Okay. So here's a question for you then. Given the reaction people had to this golf tournament.
Yeah.
We could even call this a Macko and Cause big question. Is the point of sports to document a winner in a competitive match, or is it to entertain the fan? If you had to pick one of those two as the primary goal for a sports event, is it to document?
Document. It's document.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
That is the primary goal, is to but what it should be versus what it is, you know, what, I mean, put it this way, like one thing you always debate about, we always debate about, is what's the truest measurement of, you know, who the best team is. We're focused on that more than anything else. We'll bring on boring people to break down expected goals, you know, to describe why this player is better than that player. It's not that entertaining, and there's usually a lot of math.
Okay, so one of the things that people seem to like about this golf tournament was that there was access to the players as they were playing. That would be greater than what you would get in a normal match, right?
Yes, yes.
Which raises the question for me, if people like that, is it fair to, if you're the PGA or any sports league, to turn to the players and say, okay, people really like this. Like, our fans prefer this. So you're going to have to do it. And if your performance suffers, who cares? Because in the end, we're in the job of entertaining. It's not, you know, can you score 35 versus 40 goals? It's how much fun are people having when they're watching, and do they want to come back and watch again and buy our stuff? Would that be fair for a league to say, or do we have the expectation that if entertainment gets in the way of performance, then entertainment has to go?
I don't think it's fair, because I think, especially players that have been in the league for ages, they didn't grow up. I mean, they grew up, you know, playing a sport, sacrificing, you know, doing things to make their body the best shape they can be. So then to tell them, listen, you know, tell a couple jokes, rip on that linebacker, and even if it means, you know, your performance suffers, you're here to entertain. I don't think that would be fair of the players. And I also think this is going to sound so boring. Everything is about moderation. We want that fun, that entertainment. We want to get inside the minds of the players, but we don't want it to sacrifice from the actual production, because part of what we're watching is to see human beings do physical things that take our breath away. Sometimes that's just as entertaining as a Peyton Manning joke is a Peyton Manning touchdown pass.
I'm not sure I agree with you. And when you think about how a regular season is constructed, it's not constructed for optimum performance. An 82-game season breaks players down, forces mm-hmm. them to play tired more nights than they would like to, things like back-to-backs or three nights in four or long road trips. Oh, now, all of this is done for the purposes of A, finance, and B, it's so you can give the fan lots of product because they like it. But doesn't the schedule, in essence, water down the product already?
Yeah.
It's not like the Olympics where you train for one event and you do it and then it's over. Like, there's already all kinds of concessions made to a sport as an entertainment property. So I kind of feel like it's sort of arbitrary, and it just goes back to the fact that we can circle wipe fun and say, oh, that's silly. We need to get around, you know, we need to get rid of that. But I feel like we should be circling an 82-game season and saying, this is stupid. Let these guys play 48 to 60 games, then you're going to see them playing at their real best, how good hockey can be.
I think what you're going to, though, is the definition of fun and entertainment. Sometimes for me, fun was like a deep Joe Flacco touchdown pass. He's as boring as possible, but just seeing that physical act can, you know, awe and amaze you. So that is entertaining and fun, just as, you know, Charles Barkley ripping on Tom Brady for his tee shot.
I agree, but to my point, though, maybe I didn't make it well enough, is if I want to see Alex Ovechkin be prime Ovechkin, then I should watch him play 48 to 60 games a year and not 82, because he's going to be broken down. He's going to be tired. Like, I'm not going to get the best Ovechkin. So your analogy of the Joe Flacco deep pass or the Ovechkin one-timer, as he's, you know, he doesn't really do this anymore, but he used to play like a wrecking ball. If we want to see the premium performance, the leagues aren't set up for that now.
Okay,
there's already a concession.
We're shifting over to schedule. We're shifting over to schedule talk, because before the conversation was about personalities and things like that, and bringing that sort of fun in.
It goes back to my question. What's that? Point to entertain or is the point to win? Like, I would argue that the leagues already watered down their product in an effort to entertain. So asking them to do extra stuff during the game looks different, but in some ways isn't different. We already water it down.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. I guess the other side is 82 games. Ovechkin's been pretty awesome. And yeah, if he played fewer games, he'd be more physically optimal. But then aren't we taking away the chance to see different games, different matchups? I mean, I think everyone has their own definition of what their optimal entertainment quotient is.
Well, that's certainly true. And you're always trying to shoot for the middle. And let's face it, the leagues are constructed to make the maximum dollars. And the more games, yeah, is the more dollars. And it just comes down to that. I don't know. I just looked at this golf thing and I thought, you know, my whole career, I've been tagged to be the, okay, now how do we do something more than just sports guy?
Yeah.
And I'm always the guy who's entertained in the room. And then they go back and do it exactly the way they were going to do it anyway.
I just remember telling a producer, hey, we got Jason Priestley coming on the show tomorrow. Could we get a promo on SportsCenter? And just staring at me blankly going, no, what does that have to do with sports? I'm like, well, we are your lead-in. I don't know. But, you know, they didn't do it.
I believe he played Junior A, but that's not really the point. We put him on because he was on 90210. you and I invented Prompter Cam.
That's right. Oh, and they took it seriously, and then we got it taken away from us. We were going to redefine what it meant to watch TV, and we are changing the entire sports entertainment landscape. And it was not a very high quality camera that was going to be taped to my head as I rolled Prompter.
Okay, so it was, I guess, what, 98, 99?
No, this was like 2002. I joined in 2000.
Okay, so everybody was debuting the new technology. There was this kind of cam and that kind of cam, and it got kind of stupid, right? Like, there were just reasons to put out press releases. So you and I collaborated, and we came up with Prompter Cam, and that you were going to run the prompter for the show with a camera taped to your head so that the fan could finally see what the program looked like from the perspective of the prompter.
Yep.
So we actually, and God bless the marketing department, fools that they are, I wrote up a press release with all kinds of quotes like, you know, we're just really excited to take another step forward in the evolution of sports broadcasting.
Yep.
So here's what happened. It goes out, and I don't think anything else of it until about later the next day. And all of a sudden, I get a call from our boss, Keith Pelley. He says, Bob, are you guys doing something called Prompter Cam? I'm like, yeah, how'd you know that? Matt and I are running a bit on the show. He goes, because CP just picked it up, and it's in 35 markets right now. And people are calling me from all over the business to ask, what's this new technology you're debuting?
I believe William Houston, his old sports media column, Truth and Rumors, I think it even made it in there.
We made it to 35 markets.
It was a slow news day. That was a slow news day.
We had a picture of you with a camera taped to your head, giving a big thumbs up with a gigantic pin.
They shot that down. Right after that, that idea went away, never came back.
That was the second least popular idea I ever came up with, and we had to pull down. The other one was Playboy Week.
Mm-hmm.
That did not go far.
No.
No.
Different time.
You know what? In retrospect, things were tried. Mistakes were made. What else do you want to talk about today, buddy?
You want, well, I mean, really, the biggest story in Toronto was the park, was Trinity Bellwood Park. You're super close to it. You're right in the belly of the beast. So my first thought is, I feel bad for, there was two girls, and they were playing some sort of game of catch. And they were horrible at it. They both dropped the ball. And that was part of the B-roll that CP24 kept running over and over again. And I kept thinking, those two girls, their friends and family, I hope they're just making fun of the hell out of them.
I keep thinking, what would it be like to be part of the B-roll of the idiot herd?
Yeah.
And have the entire nation, I suspect probably by now, the entire globe pointing out, this is how human beings should not act, and you're on camera?
Yes.
I actually rode past it on my bike because I had to do an errand that day on the Saturday.
Because TV sometimes, you know, will gin up outrage or fear and so just focus on, you know, the giant crowd. And they're all dumb and stupid. My question, I wasn't there. Was it like that throughout the entire park, or was it a small part of it? I have no idea.
I can't say because Trinity Bellwoods runs pretty far off the street. But going down Queen Street, as soon as I turned and I saw the park, I was shocked.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. My first thought was, I got to get the hell away from these idiots.
Yeah.
It was almost like, you know what it reminded me of in retrospect? Do you remember that episode of The Simpsons where there's the Simpsons family reunion and all the Homers and guys who look like Homer are lining up and they're taking they put pots on their head and they start slamming into each other?
Yeah.
It was a bit like that.
It, I mean, and then, you know, you get the think pieces where don't blame the people, blame the city. And I get that. But, you know, I don't like the idea it seems like, let's just go on our agenda of ripping the city for not creating more green space. We can have that conversation. I'm here for it. But let's not also, you know, rob these people of their own personal responsibility.
I don't think any reasonable person can say these poor people were set up to fail.
Yeah. Oh, but there's articles about that.
In a city of millions of people, it's not shocking that most people didn't find themselves jammed into a small space. These were the select few that managed to do something pretty much stupider than anybody else.
Yes. And once again, back to narcissism. I'm going to do it. I want to do this. This is going to make me feel good.
I don't feel like there's a political edge to it. In the States, in some places, you get a don't tread on me, fake news kind of vibe when people congregate in groups.
Yeah.
This just really felt like, and it was weird because it was hipster arrogance. It wasn't like with Sega partying where, you know, a bunch of dudes from Stainer get together with some Vats 50s and hang out on the beach.
Yeah.
It was people passing around joints and sitting on beaches and playing hacky sack and that kind of thing. And that's pretty irritating at the best of times. No, it was bad. Yep. It was terrible, Matt. You know what really jumps out at me, though? Mm. I don't think these people should be exonerated, but I do think that they're being served up as scapegoats. Because as we talk about reopening the province, we're way behind on testing. And all of the reliable science says what you can contract outdoors pales in comparison to what you can get in confined spaces. And people are being asked to go back to work.
Yeah.
So we can sit there and throw tomatoes at the goofballs in Trinity Bellwoods, and they probably asked for it. But I'm more interested, like, if you work in a 30-story building downtown, how are you supposed to use the elevator and ride in an elevator with eight other people? Is the elevator going to go up two at a time?
It's in my building, it is three at a time.
You know, it seems to me like we have bigger fish to fry than whatever happens in Trinity Bellwoods. And most of it surrounds, like, how the hell are we going to get a city of, you know, 2-3 million people back to work in a really dense environment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? Well, it's also just like, this was so predictable. You know, we saw it in the Lake of Ozarks, which was, you know, all the video of everyone just in the lake or in some sort of pool. And I've heard that the police in England were having a very difficult time with the beaches there. Apparently it's some hot weather. It's inevitable, because all it takes is a couple people doing it. And everyone's like, oh, they can do it, then I should be able to do it as well. And then next thing you know, you've got the B-roll of idiots.
We had a conversation in our family. Is it time for us to start visiting my mother-in-law?
Yeah.
She's alone. My father-in-law passed away a few years ago. She's been great. She has the tech. She knows how to use the FaceTime app. So she's not alone, but she's alone. Mm-hmm. And so we started to wonder, well, should we go over there for dinner? She hasn't gone anywhere for 8 weeks. You know what I mean? We haven't gone anywhere for 8 weeks. I feel pretty confident we're healthy. But even just as a, we decided not to do it because until we got the green light, you almost don't want to open the door too wide because it allows you to do all kinds of stupid stuff psychologically.
Yeah.
I feel the like heart, that's what we saw at the park.
The thing at the park is the moment it gets crowded, just get up and walk 5 minutes. Like find, like everyone, just everyone needs to be more responsible. Just and by the way, I know the chances, and it's a lot of younger people, and outdoors is nowhere near as bad. You know, it's more just if you're around a lot of other people that you don't know, can you not move 3 minutes?
Well, there was really nowhere to go, which I think would suggest it's time to leave. But they, I don't think people could do what you were saying, because there really wasn't a spot that was open. It was pretty much shoulder to shoulder, at least when I saw it. Well, shoulder to shoulder is an exaggeration, but it wasn't hockey stick to hockey stick. Let me put it to you that way. By the way, going back to the lake in the Ozarks, you know what really jumped out at me? Is there anything that says I'm relaxing here quite like drinking inside one of those inflatable donuts?
No. Oh, no. That's just going back to my normal life. I'm in this inflatable surrounded by other people. And just drinking a beer. 100%. By the way, what percentage of that water around them, how much of it was actually water versus urine?
Oh, I got to think. Whew. I'm going to say it's probably about somewhere between 12 and 18% piss.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going bare minimum. As I always say, if you are sitting at a swim-up bar, you have to go pee after every third Miller Lite. We'll save your seat, but you're no longer allowed. You can say you don't have to pee, but we know you do. So you get up and you pee.
It's like the ballpark. You can only have two beers. After that, you got to go back to your seat. You can't take more than that.
Yep. You got to be able to control that. Hey.
They should also force a hot dog on you just to give you a bit of a base.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that bun.
I got a question that came in from Kim Alexander.
Yep. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Kim. I'm interested in the NHL return, but not so interested to read a 21-page proposal. Can you sum it up on the pod? You want to handle that one, Cause?
Well, first, well, short answer, no, I don't. But I've gone through some of it, and basically the one thing, like the NHL, it's, they're being as responsible as they can. It's very few people there on the ice. It's no coach allowed on the ice. It's disinfect here, disinfect here, disinfect here. You're going to get your temperature taken 2 days before. And like, they're crossing as many T's and dotting as many I's as they can. A, just for optics, legal reasons, and also they don't want anyone to get it. They want to try to start the season and then not have, you know, asterisks of, well, this team didn't win because Crosby had Corona, and because they don't want it to shut her down again. So they are doing everything they should be doing.
You know what that proposal reminded me of? You know, at the beginning of a flight, when the flight attendant reads the safety card?
Yes.
The advice in it is sound. Mm-hmm. All of these things are the right things to do.
Yep.
But who cares? Because it's not going to, like, kiss your ass goodbye.
You know, Bob, my girlfriend's a flight attendant. So, you know, now you're just going to get me to be paranoid.
No, it's not. The plane's not going to go down. You know that. Well, I probably shouldn't say that here. Let me find some wood to knock on.
Yeah.
Actually, for years, I've been a nervous flyer. You're not a nervous flyer, though, are you?
No.
You're not a nervous anything.
I will tell you, no, I'm very little nervous beyond my all-encompassing fear of death. I just funnel all nervous into there. What I do have is I have this anxiety, like I don't like making people wait. So like I went into this little specialty Italian cafe. It's like a 2-minute walk from here. And they're the ones who supply like all the foods for Taroni. And I heard good things. So I went in, but I had to wait in line. And I knew there was people waiting for me to leave. And I couldn't stay. I didn't want to like look around. I was like, okay, let's just grab some things and get the hell out. Because I don't like making people wait. I had this anxiety. And I made Amy miserable because she's indecisive. And I'm like, we don't have time to be indecisive. We just got to get stuff and get out of here.
You are really good at being on time, though.
Yeah. So you hate making people wait.
You're like Captain Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I know you don't watch the show, so you don't know the reference. But, okay, I'll put it to you this way. You're like the philosopher Immanuel Kant. I'm sure that cleared things up.
Yeah, go with that one.
He used to walk through his town square. I think it was Wittenberg. Anyway, some German city. Every day at 6 o'clock after dinner. And the one day he didn't appear, someone was like, wow, that's weird. He must be dead. They went to his place and yep, he was dead.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like Amy will send me a message if she's like, huh, you should have been home by now, you know, because you are very efficient and quick and never late. And yeah, oh yeah, if I'm 7 minutes late, you know, send out the search party.
When you used to haul my ass up to TSN 1050 and I would meet in the mornings, if you were ever more than 3 minutes late, I would phone because
that's true.
Must be passed out somewhere. Like not because you were hungover, but I mean like with food poisoning or something like the Michael Jordan food poisoning, which I still don't believe in, but okay.
I love that I'm a time freak. So that's where my anxiety can come from. I love the fact that the pizza guy is now talking about it, saying we did not poison Michael Jordan. I love that that became a story.
The Ringer has done a good job of just putting out all kinds of content around what's your favorite Michael Jordan lie from The Last Dance. Okay, Eric Frieds writes in, do you want the sports one or the general one?
I'll do the general one, then we'll go back to sports.
Who would win in a foot race, Superman or Mighty Mouse?
Superman.
Yeah, it's not even a client. Like, Mighty Mouse couldn't keep up. No way. Nope. Is Mighty Mouse overrated or underrated?
Overrated. He's a mouse. Top,
right?
Yeah.
No personality. Did Mighty Mouse even have an alter ego?
I preferred Speedy Gonzalez. He had a little more flair. My 7-year-old self preferred Speedy Gonzalez.
Here's the sports question. Who's the one Maple Leaf you thought should have been a star but wasn't? I got two if you want to think about it.
Because
I'm just dropping this on you.
Yeah.
Luke Shen.
Yes.
When he came up and he looked good and he was still a teenager and the Toronto Sun had at least once a week some kind of article about how he was going to be a future captain, he just kind of dropped off after that. So I thought he was going to be maybe a star, certainly a really good player. And the other one was Nick Antropov, who was big and skilled, but just never seemed to get past a certain mark. And this is what dawned on me. This was true of Pavel Kabina too. But do you find that in hockey, when guys are big but don't play big, we tend to underestimate how good they are?
I like to think when a guy is big and doesn't play big, I feel we go after them even harder, like a Freddie Doge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like even with Austin Matthews. If he was 3 inches shorter and 20 pounds lighter and played exactly the same game with exactly the same results, we wouldn't feel cheated. But because he's big, it's like, you know, and you know who's actually maybe the best example in history of a guy who was big but didn't play big? Mario.
Yeah.
Mario's giant.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like taking this to a slightly different place, but Leafs versus Boston, well, Boston's tougher. Well, guess what? Matthews and Tavares... Matthews is bigger and stronger and weighs more than Marchand, than Bergeron, than Pasternak, than any of those guys. Even like Nylander, Tavares, like Hyman, all these guys are bigger. They weigh more and they're taller than the Boston players. It's just, you know, Zdeno Chara is the exception. So, and yeah, it does upset us.
You know, today is the anniversary of the guarantee game, the Messier guarantee game.
It was yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday?
Did Trust me, Bob, I used it on... Of course I did.
So I have a heresy that I want to throw your way.
Do it.
Mark Messier is overrated as a leader.
Ooh. Careful there, Bob.
They loved him in Edmonton. They loved him in New York. They hated him and still hate him in Vancouver.
Yeah.
He brought in Keenan. They split the room. They made Trevor Linden's life miserable. Trevor Linden was incredibly popular to that point. He played on the outside. He floated. His penalty minutes dropped. He was a great leader for a long time, but kind of a sellout at the end, which here's the real question, Matt. How much do we forgive the embarrassing last chapter of a great player, and how much are we allowed to consider it part of their greater legacy?
Well, again, going back to it, I totally forgive Brett Favre's final year with Minnesota because his second last year was incredible. I think it depends how long you hang on for. You know, like if you have just one or two bad years, we'll allow it. If every year you're still trying to stick with a team, I know it's well within your right to, but just, you know, move on. Like Vince Carter, just go hang out with your family. You don't need to play 9 minutes for the Hawks.
I noticed The Last Dance wasn't really The Last Dance, Matt, because there was a little time with Washington.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, Jordan, like, if we're going to talk about full basketball legacy, you know, no one's worse in terms of he was horrible in Washington. The Charlotte roster is confusing. I don't know how that's possible to have so little talent yet pay so much money. I mean, in this case, Larry Bird lapped Michael Jordan.
Yeah. We must be almost
even Isaiah. Even Isaiah. Yeah, we're at 45. We're at 45
okay.
minutes.
So I got a couple of rapid questions and then a life question for you, okay?
Do it.
UFC is entertaining the idea of something called Fight Island, where they go, the fighters do, and they all fight a tournament on some island in international waters.
Yep.
Two-part question. Is that, A, the best thing you've ever heard in your life? And, B, is this really the real-life plot of Enter the Dragon?
Yes, it is. And I can't, like, I'm trying to, like, there's all these different movies that remind me of it. Like, I feel Jean-Claude Van Damme and Chuck Norris somehow have to be involved. What I love most about this idea, Bob, is that if it actually happens and international fighters fly in on a fleet of private planes that Dana White sets up, where is, like, you know who's going to broadcast it? Disney. It's like ESPN, ABC, Disney, they're all partnered with it. So Disney would play some part in Fight Island.
Oh, so good. And so Disney, they're really spreading their tentacles, eh? So between Fight Island and the NBA, they're saving sports.
Yeah.
What is more likely to be a cottage industry in the media? Tua's first year or LaMelo Ball's first year?
Oh. See, the answer is Tua, quarterback, football is still king, came from Alabama. They haven't had a Pro Bowl quarterback since 1995. What's missing, though, is soap opera. And you've got that with the Ball family, nutty dad, everything, you know, and everything there. That's a tough one. I'm going to go Ball because, you know, I'm going to go Ball just because of the soap opera.
Yeah, me too. The Lamar Ball factor, you just can't underestimate it. Okay, and within the next 3 years, who winds up deeper into the playoffs, Miami or Tampa?
In the next 3 years.
Between now and the end of the playoffs, 3 years from now, who will have gone farther in the playoffs, Miami or Tampa?
I'm going to go with Tampa. Everything Miami does fails. So I'm just going to go somehow this will continue to fail for the Dolphins.
I agree with that one, but it occurred to me that the AFC East is now gettable.
Oh, yeah.
And we're counting on the Bills to be the best team, which we should never do.
That's a good point.
We're counting on the Jets to be competitive, which we should never do. So they might wind up with like even a bye.
Yeah.
They might be a mediocre. They might pull a Jacksonville Jaguars and somehow manage to be a good team once and, you know, wind up in the second round to start.
That is a good point. The geography of the Dolphins in that horrible division.
And Tampa, that's going to be a tough division for them.
Yep. By the way, if New England wins the division this year, everyone else is relegated. They're just out. You're gone. Like, go form the new XFL. Go join Vince McMahon.
All right, Matt, final thing for me, and I got a life question for you.
Yeah.
So this morning, a project I've been working on, the funding fell through, and it was disappointing.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. In the business, you just got to suck it up. Everybody who's in business for themselves knows you get a lot more no's than yeses. But it occurred to me that if all my friends, who handles disappointment the best, it's you. So you got 1 minute, Matt. How do you deal with disappointment?
You compartmental. Here's how I actually do it. It is part ego and it is part fear of death. I'm not going to allow one person, like unless it's like my loved ones, like people super close, but I'm not going to allow one thing to keep me down for that long. How dare they try to be able to control my life? No. I'm on this earth for a brief period of time. So I will process that disappointment. I will put it in its proper place. And then I will move the fuck on as quick as possible because I don't want to dwell on negative because I'm Matt Kaws. You think you can control me? Get the bleep out of here.
Matt, I've said it before and I'll say it again. You are the most highly evolved person I know. You are. I meant it when I said, okay, I like that. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. All right, buddy. I got to go see what homework my daughter's not doing right now. I got to fly.
Okay, Bob. I will chat with you on Friday. Have a great show today. See you soon. Be careful in the park. All the best.
Thanks very much. Yep. Have a good week, Maddie. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Kaws podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.